Hi, this is Warwick Davis, and you're listening to the Friday Filibuster.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster. I'm Dave Johnson, joined by Daryl Loomis.
Hello.
And Eric Astroslager.
Hello.
Hey, hello. All right. And we're here to, give you a good send-off to your weekend, a snowy weekend, perhaps. I don't know. We've already established that Daryl lives in Atlantis or Shangri-La or something. We don't get that snow. But up in New England, I don't know if, Eric, you're getting it, but we're going to get destroyed this weekend, I think.
Yeah, I think we're supposed to get some of it, but not as much as you are.
Yeah, so we shall see what happens. But let's get right into it. Daryl, why don't you update us? What have you been up to?
Let's see. Again, a lot of the same things. I can finally put the post-mortem on Deadwood as of yesterday.
Nice.
Finally completed it. The last few episodes are a mess, but I was prepared for that. But more importantly, I'm excited with reservation for the premiere of Community tomorrow.
That's right.
Wow. I hardly believe it's October already.
I know. Was it October 16th? Is that what the
who knows
joke is?
So tell me what your expectations are.
I really don't know. I mean, at this point, I trust the cast. When I go back and I watch the first season, which lead up to the season 4 premiere, I've been going through and watching some of my favorite episodes from around the series. And even when you go back into the first few episodes, which aren't my favorite, the performances are good enough. And even if the characters haven't been entirely established, there's still a lot of funny things going on in it. And of course, as the characters get established, it becomes what it's been the last couple of years. So I have a lot of faith the cast is going to be able to bridge the gap. And I think, the new showrunners, I don't know their names.
Do we know their pedigree?
I believe that at least one of them has been a writer on the show, but
he wrote all the Betty White bits, I think, right?
Yes, of course.
Oh man.
They're consistently talking about their confidence in the show and their confidence in the idea that they'll get picked up for a season 5, although I find that terribly unlikely. But if they've got that much confidence, if they've got enough confidence in what they're doing in the end results, that they feel like they're going to get picked up for a fifth season, it leaves me, cautiously optimistic about it.
All right.
We'll see. I mean, I know the first episode has like a Hunger Games style thing going on. But that should be, the idea of that should be nothing new to fans of the show.
Eric, how about you? What are your expectations?
It's really hard to say. I sort of just kind of whatever happens, happens. At this point, if it's good, it's gravy. If not, it's, not necessarily.
It's not going to retroactively tarnish your
love. No, it can't.
Yes.
No,
you
it
always
can't.
Have. You always have those seasons, right?
I'll always have this. Yeah, I'll always have Harmon. So it's, it sort of feels like, who knows? Maybe though this will be an interesting, parallel thing to the last season of Fringe in the sense that it's extra. We got a good send off when we got what we got, and we'll see what happens. Whatever happens, if it's good, great.
Yeah.
And apparently, doing a little research, the new showrunners were not involved with Community before now, at all. They worked together on, shows such as Mad About You, Just Shoot Me, and Happy Endings. So take that for what it is worth.
All right, well, there you go.
But when you say those titles in a row, they kind of kind of paint the way I feel about all of those shows individually, actually. So
Yeah.
All right. So. Okay. Anything else, Daryl?
Nah, that's about it.
Okay, Eric, how about you?
This is something I really should have mentioned before it happened, the 2 weeks previous, but I took part last week in the F This Movie Fest 2.
Yes.
And the guys over there, Mac took part as well, and it was basically an all Twitter film festival. this year. Last year they did movies in 1982. This year they did movies from 1991. Five movies over the course of a day, so nice. 10 plus hours of movies.
Okay, so
with people kind of conversing about it on Twitter, and you know, you had to secure your own copy of the movie, but everyone kind of watched at the same time. It was a lot of fun. It was really great. What were the movies?
Yeah, what were the movies?
The movies were, we started with The Last Boy Scout.
Which I have not seen. The only thing I've seen is like the end of it when the dude falls into the helicopter blades. That's all.
Yeah. I really liked it. I think if I had watched it kind of on my own and not as part of a festival crowd, I might not have been as into it, but it's a very like prototypical action, 90s action movie. It's Bruce Willis, Damon Wayans,
The height of his powers.
Right, yeah. Directed by Tony Scott, written by Shane Black, and it is one-liners. It is one-liners, and it's amazing. Halle Berry's in it briefly. It's just this amazing concoction of action and one-liners and Bruce Willis, and it was a lot of fun. I think that. Again, not necessarily my cup of tea, but was great to kick off the festival. So we watched that first. Then we watched The Rocketeer.
Yes,
which was fun. I had not seen that actually. I think since like junior high.
And how's that one age?
It holds up very well. It's certainly a differently paced movie than you get today. There's not a lot of the actual like flying around and stuff, but for a 40s style. Kind of superhero type movie. It was a lot of fun. This is directed by Joe Johnston. Has a lot in common with what he did with Captain America recently. It was fun. It was good to watch it again. The DVD that I got from the library was non-anamorphic widescreen, so that was a blast from the past too. That was fun. Next up was Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
I'm a fan of that movie.
Now, you know, I am going to completely mea culpa myself. That's not how you use that term, I'm sure. But a while back, I came on the show. First time I'd seen Bill and Ted's, and I said I did not like it.
Okay.
I really liked it this time.
Okay.
I did not give it its due the first time. I was wrong.
I grew up. I grew up with him. I watched that movie a lot. Whenever it came out, whatever age I was, I watched it an unhealthy amount of times. Me and my brother just laughed riotously at Bill Sadler's death one-liners, you know?
Part of the fun of having a Twitter film festival is that people were constantly, like, you know, at replying or reaching out to various celebrities who were involved in these movies, and William Sadler responded to a bunch of tweets during the festival.
Oh, excellent.
That's just pretty cool. Yeah, he was great. The movie does so many things, and it's just kind of insane to consider this is a sequel, and usually sequels play it safe, and they just did so many they went for it.
Case study on how a sequel should be.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
You're exactly right. It was totally different. Like completely and utterly and totally different from the first movie. And yeah, just absolutely insane. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was probably the highlight of the festival for me personally. I really liked that one. That was a lot of fun to watch. Next up we watched New Jack City.
Nice.
I'd never seen before. That was probably my least favorite of the movies, if only because it seemed really rushed and hokey compared to The Wire. And again, it all comes down to the stupid Wire. But again, you basically have the story of drug trafficking and this police investigation. It's there are parallels there, and yet it's like, oh, how did Ice-T manage to infiltrate this group? Because he just showed up at the right time. It was just weird. Like it all seemed like it moves too quickly. It was kind of unbelievable. But the music was good, and it was a very kind of a super 90s movie, which was fun.
Yeah. So. I wore out two cassette tapes of that soundtrack.
All right.
When I was a kid. And that was actually the first big movie role for Chris Rock, wasn't it? Not a big role, but the first role for Chris Rock in it.
Probably, yeah. He plays a drug addict, and he is very drug addict-y in that movie. So it was good. The low point for me is relative charm. It was still fun to watch. And then we wrapped up with Terminator 2.
Sure.
Which I can appreciate the action scenes in that movie. I still am not a huge fan. I don't, there, whatever it is, there is some some gene I don't have that lets me appreciate James Cameron movies. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, but I think I've got just, that too.
I really, for as great and as, you know, impressive as the action is, it's just, as the character stuff and the dialogue, it's just, I can't get over it. But
he's never really, I mean, as much as he fashions himself this, you know, this grand writer, I can't think of any movie he's written with any dialogue leaps out. And if it is, it's inadvertent, like in Aliens. All the quotable lines, like, you know, it's Bill Paxton's meathead lines, you know?
Yeah, it's not like Newt talking about aliens.
And I agree with you.
It's hard because, I mean, it feels like the characters are all placeholders for where real characters should go later on, and no one ever just, like, went back and fixed it. It was like, well, this is going to be this kind of character, and that's it. That's just this defines them. But it was still fun to watch. I know I had reviewed the Terminator Blu-ray box set a couple of months ago and left feeling pretty down on T2. I think I enjoyed it more watching it with people who liked it this time. But all in all, a lot of fun. Again, I should have told everyone about it beforehand. Sorry, we'll do it again next year. But definitely, as part of the DVD Verdict family, you know, spinoff side of family, fthismovie.net, check it out. But it was a lot of fun.
I will say, back to T2 real quick, I would say, and I'm probably the minority on this, and that's fine, but as my appreciation for T2 has perhaps softened, my appreciation for T3 has risen. I'm a fan of Terminator 3, because it's like the opposite. It's, you know, you talk about different sequels, and again, for better or for worse, and I know a lot of people say for worse, and that's fine, but it is a lean 90-minute road movie with Terminators in it.
Right.
You know, and it's just totally different, and that change of pace is kind of fun for me.
Yeah, Terminator 3, it starts off essentially the same as the first two movies.
Yep.
And that's sort of the thing, like, the Terminator series is weird because it is at one sort of, it has this very interesting premise that they do almost nothing with.
Same thing over and over again.
Right, basically the same thing over and over again. It's two things coming from the future, and one is good and one is bad, and they just kind of chase in those action scenes. And I will say the thing, you know, Terminator 3 starts basically the same as Terminator 2, down to the, you know, women checking out naked Arnold Schwarzenegger in the bar. But it ends with the end of the world. So I like that.
Yeah.
And then for whatever problems Terminator Salvation has, at least they moved it in the future. At least it's not running through Los Angeles again.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we can all just hope. RoboCop vs. Terminator. It was a video game first. Let's get it as a feature film.
That'd be good. That'd be good.
All right. Sounds like you had a full – sounds like good times.
Good times.
All right. So I got nothing – not a ton to report on, though. I did want to get – I don't know if you guys caught the Super Bowl at all, or more specifically some of the Super Bowl spots for a couple movies. There was Iron Man 3, which I didn't see the extended cut. I just saw the – you know, the people kind of flying out of the airplane. And then Fast and the Furious 6, which actually looked kind of cool, and, you know, and obviously in the meaty, red meat, popcorn movie kind of way, until Michelle Rodriguez showed up at the end there and ruined everything. So I don't know if that's on the spot. I mean, it was cool. It's like, hey, The Rock, and he's jacked up like more than ever, and he comes over and says, hey, guys, let's fight against some terrorists. So instead of them kind of racing and screwing around, they're all driving and fighting bad guys, and that could be kind of fun and cool and looks like a lot of action in the last scene. It's Michelle Rodriguez, and I know exactly how that story beat will play out for sure from now on. So, but that extended trailer was more interesting too, so yeah, I'm surprised they turned that around. I just felt like we just had Fast and the Furious movie. That was, they're like Call of Duty installments. They're just cranking them out.
Yeah,
so.
I think I heard that the sixth and seventh movies were shot back to back.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
It's coming, Dave.
It's coming. All right. Great.
They're shooting them fast and furious.
Okay, so we'll see where the sixth one ends then. So I don't know. Did you guys, I don't know if there were any other big spots that I've missed or maybe you caught online afterwards. Anything jump out at you?
I really missed all that stuff. I sort of had it on in the background streaming because we still don't have, you know, TV. But I should go. I keep meaning to go out and check out the movie trailers, but I haven't done that yet.
Yeah, nothing really sticks with me. There were a bunch of ads that I hated, but no movie spots that really stuck out at me. I saw the Iron Man 3 spot, but I did not see the Fast and the Furious 6 spot.
The extended version? I'm not an extended version of it.
No, just the one you saw.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big – I mean, I love the first Iron Man movie. I stopped watching the second one because it made no sense, and it seems like everyone was just making up their lines as they were going along. So the third one would have to have some pretty great word of mouth for me to tap back into that.
I didn't see the second one. I like the first one okay. I mean, superhero movies aren't really my bag, but they all seem kind of the same, you know. With the same kind of shots and the same kind of dialogue, but as it goes, I mean, it was fun enough.
It was Robert Downey Jr. because you're right, all the beats were in place there.
Yeah,
But the second one,
Thor.
Too much of that. Thor, yeah, totally.
I can say that, so you know, damning with faint praise, I guess.
Okay, yeah, but I'm trying to think, looking in the crystal ball. Stuff that's coming out this year. I guess there was a Star Trek Into Darkness clip that looked kind of cool. You know, more Benedict Cumberbatch. But yeah, real quick, movies coming out in the summer that appeal to you guys? Anything jumping out?
Well, I'm not sure if it's summer or fall, but yeah. The World's End is probably my most anticipated movie.
One is that one in a series of post-apocalypse movies?
Or which it's one? It's the last one in the whatever they call it, the Blood and Ice Cream trilogy. It's the one, you know, there's Edgar Wright. Edgar Wright.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Oh, I can't wait.
Sorry, yeah,
sign me up for sure.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can tell you that I will never see Baz Luhrmann's Great Gatsby.
Okay. Fair.
I don't know. That's not something that I'm looking forward to. It's something I'm looking forward to never having to deal with.
Gotcha. That's not too bad.
There's Man of Steel, which
I forgot about that. That's something I'm definitely interested in because I like the Superman character and I'm looking forward to a good Superman movie, which we haven't had since 1978, I think. So
there's Superman 3.
Yeah. Yes. I guess one of these days we need to do our own little F this Superman 3.
Right?
We talk about it so much. I'm looking forward to it. We'll see what happens.
I'll probably see Kick-Ass 2. I liked the first one, and, you know, I'll probably see that at some point.
Yeah. All right, really, it's still February, so
yeah,
you don't have to really think about that too much.
World War Z is going to be a big. Looks like it'll be a big hit.
That's true. Pacific Rim.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely for sure.
So, yeah, we'll see.
The next Hobbit movie will be out, right? Won't it be out this next year?
Because I think it's December, July. That's the release schedule for the Hobbit movies. So.
Right.
Yeah, so for sure I'm psyched for that. But yeah, I'm just thinking more summerish, I suppose.
Oh,
yeah, I totally forgot about that. Yeah, the Edgar Wright movie is rockets at the top of my list for sure.
Totally.
Absolutely. Okay, moving on. Stuff we got coming up. Daryl.
The big one I got coming up, I mean, such as it goes, is it's an old childhood favorite of mine. My dad turned me on to it when I was a kid, is Our Man Flint. James Coburn, spy, spoof. Very strange, very 60s. Came out in 1965. And more the really more the genesis of the Austin Powers movies than the Bond movies are.
Mm-hmm.
The style, the gadgetry. I mean, obviously Bond has gadgetry, but nothing so ridiculous as Flint does. You know, the thing I like about it, James Coburn's the coolest guy in history, basically, to me. And the fact that the character, unlike Bond, who's just an assassin, the Flint character can do surgery, can teach ballet, has a harem, and offs like 35 people in the movie.
Wow.
It's just absurd, including one great great bit where he fights a bald, muscly henchman, since it's a spy movie, in a bathroom, and with his karate skills, kicks the guy into a bathroom, or into a stall, and the stall door crashes closed, and this is, you know, the 1960s, so it's a pay toilet, and so Flint just rolls his eyes, pulls some change out of his pocket, and opens up the door so that he can finally dispatch him, and in one of the funniest, stupidest spy fights I've ever seen. And so I love that movie. It's a Blu-ray. It's got probably about 2.5 hours of special features on it. It's from Twilight Time, so it's a limited edition kind of thing. But the movie looks great. It's a gorgeous print, and really happy to be reviewing that.
Nice. Eric?
I'm reviewing a BBC faux documentary series called 2012, which apparently ran in the lead up to the 2012 Olympics. The whole idea is kind of following this, you know, hapless committee as they're working to get London ready for the Olympics. So a little bit behind the times on that one. It's a little odd to watch it now. Obviously the whole faux documentary format has gotten a little bit played out at this point as well. But it has some people I really like in it. It's got Hugh Bonneville from Downton Abbey, Lord Grantham. It's got Jessica Hines from Spaced. And it's got Olivia Colman, who was in Peep Show and also in Tyrannosaurus. Anyway, but it's perfectly fine for what it is. I don't find myself, you know, laughing all that much. But you know, they do the uncomfortable British thing pretty well. So it's apparently it ran for two 6-episode series. So this is the whole thing, all 12. So.
All right.
There you go.
Not bad. Review that posted today, or 2 days ago, whenever you listen to this podcast. It is Harakiri, Miike's follow-up to 13 Assassins, which I was kind of lukewarm about, to be honest.
Yeah, I was disappointed about that. I haven't seen it to say, so.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't want to – I mean, it's beautiful. It looks beautiful. I mean, so his – you know, his talent and his craftsmanship is on full display. And I went in really wanting to love it. But it just, it just didn't really work for me. And I don't want to get spoilery, but there's a moment, you know, a samurai, the basic plot is a samurai shows up at this lord's manor and requests to the honor of committing harakiri in his courtyard. You know, because he's got no money, he's a out of work ronin, he's got nothing going on. But apparently, he's been bluffing. But to teach a lesson to other potential bluffs, they make him go through with it, and it's a brutal sequence, not bloody and sinewy, but brutal. And then the movie shifts to why he ended up there, and it's that narrative that ultimately disappoints, and unfortunately, because the whole movie kind of rests on that working. That's why I just kind of didn't grab onto it. And there was a chance for some pretty badass redemption at the end, but it was just kind of a weird ending, and then it got pretty monologue-y about honor, Bushido code, humanity, that kind of stuff. So, I don't know, some cool stuff in there, stuff I did like. It looked great, well-acted, top-notch everywhere. Definitely not an action movie, so don't expect 13 Assassins. It is low-key, dare I say, slow-moving. So,
yeah, the original's pretty slow-moving, too.
Okay.
So that doesn't necessarily surprise me, and I don't expect flaming boars in it.
Yeah, no, but this is like the other direction too, I think.
Right.
So,
and Miike has done so many different things that whenever, you know, I basically, when I watch one of his movies, I always have to go in with a completely open mind, because you don't know if you're going to get 13 Assassins. You don't know if you're going to get a musical comedy about innkeepers. You don't know if you're going to get some bizarro thing about a guy in a pig's with a pig head. You just never know. So I'm certainly going to see it and go into it with an open mind.
I don't want to even say it's a bad movie. You know, I think, you know, my expectations were really high, and I think there's a lot to get out of it for sure. And it will elicit some strong emotional responses, I think. You know, but overall, I just don't think it just. The way it's assembled doesn't quite work out for me. But again, that just might be me. So.
And he's so varied. Did either of you ever watch any of the Master of Horrors series? Did you see his entry?
Oh,
in
yes.
It?
The one that they actually refused to show
air.
On Showtime.
Yeah, Showtime wouldn't air it. And so it could be super extreme. It could be super gentle. Yeah, you know, he's made kid movies. He's made, you reviewed Zebra Man, right, Dave?
I did, yeah, and I also he also did a kind of a straightforward like action thriller that I reviewed, just like a gangster thriller that wasn't over the top. And this, I will say that a lot of like there's some brutal stuff in it, but a lot of it's implied, and you don't really. I mean, I had a hard time. I had to skip through some of it because it goes on for a while, and it's just it's pretty rough. But it's not like in your face, you know, splatter either. So it's right. He was kind of reserved on that. So and he could have gone easily in the other direction, but he didn't. It was actually that scene was actually more effective for that, and that scene was so effective that's why, you know, the tail behind it. Kind of, you know, just under delivered for me.
Yeah, and I think in the original is sort of from the way you're describing it seems sort of like the opposite of that.
Okay,
where that first part that you're talking about it's a good scene, but all the stuff that comes after it with his uncle, and I presume that his uncle is part of this as well.
Uh-huh.
Is he?
The samurais.
The samurai's uncle, yeah.
No, but another relation. He's another close relation.
Okay, so there is in the original some pretty fun samurai stuff, and it's like 1962 or 1961, something like that. But there is some pretty cool samurai stuff and some pretty cool fighting that comes in right at the end of it. So it sounds like he kind of tried to do something a little bit different with it.
Yeah, there is a little bit of fighting at the end, but it's like. It's kind of to serve the point that mm-hmm. Mikkei's making, and so it's not. It never feels like visceral. It could have been, like, and you're primed for it when it happens. You're like, oh yeah, let's get it on, you know. But it's kind of odd, and I don't know. Again, but it's not an action movie, so I'd be interested to see what you take on it. Let me just say it's worth seeing. How about that?
Yeah, I'll definitely see it as soon as it's available to me someplace, somewhere easily.
And the guy could, you're right, for all the crazy over-the-top shenanigans he can do, I mean, the guy is so talented as a straight director, too, you know? I mean,
yeah, yeah.
And I will say it maybe, it's all packed up now, but it made me desperately want to watch 13 Assassins again because that movie is so fantastic. So
yeah, it really is. It really is.
And lastly, let's see, I've just finally finished watching Here Comes the Boom. Of course, we were talking about
took
that.
Took you a whole 24 hours to do that, huh?
It took me a long time.
You started last night, if I remember.
I'm watching it in like three chunks. It's just slow going. So, yeah, and then a Lake Placid sequel. So all that is coming soon. So
Lake Placid does not. Lake Placid didn't. This is the fourth Lake Placid movie.
Maybe it just says Lake Placid, the final chapter, whatever number that is. I don't know.
I think that's four, and that's pathetic.
Yeah, it's pretty pathetic. All right, enough of that tomfoolery. Let's go to Pinch It for Mac here. Let's check out the upcoming releases. DVDverdict.com. Click the DVD releases tab, upcoming stuff for February 12th. Cover art gallery, follow along, you know how it works.
Okay, let's see. Ooh, there's one for you, Croczilla, Dave. I guarantee you'll have that.
That should be. Oh, what's the comeback? What do you make of that, Daryl? Is that up your alley?
The cover's up my alley.
yeah.
It's British. I know Holly Palance. It's old. I bet you I wind up reviewing that thing. I'll watch it. I'll watch it one way or the other. I'll watch it just for that cover alone, which is how I make decisions on movies all the time.
Speaking of horror DVD covers, and this movie might be stupid. Daryl, have you heard of this movie called, what's it called, Smiley?
Is it on?
Smiley. It's like it looks like there is a supernatural killer of some sort that has basically a smiley face sewn into his face.
And it's got your 20 somethings lined up nicely in a symmetrical pattern at him as well.
I remember seeing some sort of banner ad for that at some point. And the image is creepy.
Yeah, the image is creepy. The lineup of teens reminds me way too much of the old Kevin Williamson horror movies of the 90s.
Sure.
I know what you did last summer and all that, and they all looked exactly just Final Destination cover looked like that. Man, and some of those people are not teens. Some of those people are old. So, yeah, I don't know what they're doing. Could be good. You never know. When somebody says the new face of horror on a thing with a smiley face, you know, I'm a little bit skeptical of that, but you never know.
It's literally true, though. You can't dispute that.
I won't try to dispute it. I'm just skeptical of it.
You can't do that.
Now, a few – I know it's supposed to be a tantalizing erotic movie, and I guess it's probably just straight 80s porn, but I can't think of anything less enticing than the cover for Same Time Every Year. It looks like a slug is climbing into that woman's mouth.
This is the sequel to Slither.
Yeah, it does look like that. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm reviewing Serena 2 Over, which is some kind of erotic retelling of Cinderella this week. Which,
yeah, how's that treating you?
I haven't watched it yet, but I did the erotic retelling of Alice in Wonderland sometime last year, and it didn't treat me very well. So,
you have to go through the beaded curtain in the back to get those to review?
Yes.
Yeah. Let's see. We got
a lot of 007 stuff.
Yeah,
007 with Skyfall coming out. So there's a whole bunch of the because they already released the Blu-ray box set for the.
Yeah, they're doing the separate ones now.
Yeah, so although I heard that Blu-ray box set is now out of print.
Oh,
well that. So now you can buy them all individually.
There you go. Yep.
At an upcharge. What did I see there?
Oh, there's this The Man with the Iron Fist?
Yes, I just saw that, which I didn't see. I heard extremely mixed things about that.
Okay, yeah. It did not appeal to me from just the commercials I saw. But
the people who liked it like it quite a bit, but I never got a real handle on why that is. Mm. It looked pretty pretty poor to me. And I also looking forward to House of Whipcord.
I saw that.
Which
I have
will seen. Be very disappointing, but
I have seen a movie called House of Whipcord. I think I did see that. And I have no recollection of it.
I'm remember. Guessing it's the same movie.
It must be.
Go on a limb.
It's got to be, right? Yeah.
I think when someone reviews it, it's going to have to be House of Whipcord 1963 because there's three other House of Whipcords. One from the 80s, one from the 40s.
Oh, it looks like Redemption's actually doing a bunch of Pete Walker films. That's what all three of these are.
Okay.
British schlock director, so I'll probably see all of them at some point. There's my Chinese Dangerous Liaisons, which was excellent.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of any of the movies, this does the whole thing good justice. It's a quality, well made, sleazy, but you know, Dangerous Liaisons has this weird rides the line between period Merchant Ivory style storytelling and total sleaze subject matter, and you know, just the whole thing is right up my alley, and I was really impressed with what they did for this Chinese one.
Now, have either of you seen this old like 70s Hardy Boys TV show?
I've never seen it. I mean, it's
I'm familiar with its existence.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair,
okay, I've actually
sort
watched
of
it.
Pop culturally well known, right?
Is it? Oh yeah, I guess I must have missed that.
I remember, here's what I remember about it. I remember that Sean Cassidy, who was an actor in this, made that American Gothic show starring Gary Cole way back when. You remember that show? I remember American Gothic. It was like, yeah, some genre show, and it was years ago. But I remember a lot of the marketing was, oh, Sean Cassidy from the Hardy Boys made this. So it must have, I've never seen an episode of it, so I have no idea.
Sean Cassidy, maybe I'm thinking of the wrong Cassidy, but isn't he popular for something more than the Hardy Boys TV show? Who was the one who was
David
in the
Cassidy?
I am absolutely thinking of David Cassidy.
Yeah.
Fine.
I wonder who plays Chet in the Hardy Boys. You know?
Oh no.
Kind of naive, pleasantly plump one.
Yeah, I bet they changed the formula. They probably wrote Chet out or something.
like they did with Starbuck and Battlestar Galactica.
There you go.
Hey, Chet's an Asian female now. So.
I bet Chet's a car.
Chet is a car.
That's what I would guess.
Okay, let's go with our inadvertently sleazy sounding D release of the week. Daryl, go ahead.
Let's see. There's a couple of decent ones on here that haven't been named since obviously House of Whipcord is part of that, but I am going to go with Come and Get Me.
Nice. Eric?
All right, I'll go with Martha's Magnificent Egg.
That's
very good.
Biology majors.
Absolutely.
I think I've used this one before, but I'm going to use it again. Max's Chocolate Chicken.
It still works.
Still works. Okay, let's wrap this up with our ambush topics. We'll power on through this. Daryl, why don't you kick us off this time?
All right. Headlights.
I'm going to go with the great scene in Annie Hall where Christopher Walken, as Diane Keaton's brother, tells Woody Allen's character the story of how when he's driving down the road and he sees oncoming headlights, he always thinks about turning into the lane and describes, you know, turning in front of him and describes, you know, the horrific crash that would ensue and this fantasy that he has. And, of course, Woody Allen's, you know, very terrified of it, and he wants to get out of there as soon as possible. And then Diane Keaton asks her brother to give him a ride to the airport, and the next shot is just Woody Allen looking terrified in the front seat as he drives them to the airport at night.
Nice. I'm going to go with,
I'm sure I butchered that. I mean, it's much funnier in the movie. I should have just said that scene from Annie Hall. Watch Annie Hall. Anyway.
Speaking of Bond, I'm going to go with Casino Royale when he's zipping along in his Aston Martin in a dark road. And then that cool scene with the headlights just flash over Eva Green on the road. And the stuntman sets the world record for flipping that Aston Martin.
Very good.
That was a very nicely executed sequence, I thought.
I'm going to go with what is essentially the entirety of Duel, the old Steven Spielberg movie.
No.
What? Which?
We didn't talk about it on this podcast, but I remember just hearing about it, reading about it recently. But yeah, Duel.
You know, the whole it's scary because it's just a semi in the night
and you never,
bearing down. Never, you never know.
You never know, right? You never identity or anything or the.
Then they basically remade that with that movie with Steve Zahn and Lily Sobieski. What the heck movie was that?
Joyride.
Joyride. Yes, thank you. Same movie, not as good.
But it could have been a lot worse, I'd say, though.
It could have been a lot worse. It did have three endings.
Yeah, that's true.
Just like Clue.
Just like Clue. And I was actually, that was really, that movie, Joyride, was really disappointing to me because, on a side note, because I had, in high school, had become a big fan of John Dahl, the director of that, from Red Rock West and The Last Seduction. Two excellent, excellent, excellent neo-noirs. And that was sort of his big splash. And boy, did it belly flop for me at the time. But Duel.
Duel.
Awesome.
Gotcha. Good stuff. All right, I'll go next. This is going to be a layup, but just a movie or a premise in a movie that would have in a non-fantasy, you know, non-gaggy movie or whatever, but a premise that would have zero chance of really happening in real life.
Oh, so just an altogether fake premise?
Yeah, well, not even that. Something relatively grounded in real life, so Zombie Outbreak doesn't count. So
the Zombie Outbreak would get made into a movie.
Grounded, but the premise just would either the premise would never happen or characters would never, you know, real human beings would never act in the way these characters act.
A star-crossed love between a firefighter and a pyromaniac.
What's the name of the movie?
No, that's just the plot.
Oh,
we're gonna name the movie?
Yeah, so like a real movie? No, an actual movie.
Oh, it's an actual movie. Oh.
My fault. That's poor communication skills, I mean. So, but that sounds like a great movie. You just So no, an actual movie with a premise or featuring characters that make decisions that no real human being.
I see.
Plot that would never make
you. Misunderstanding.
I'm sorry.
But if anybody wants to write that, star-crossed love between a firefighter and a pyromaniac. It would be really,
Quick, Eric, give me the title. No.
Well, been Burning Love, but they already have that for
the
web series. Yeah.
Well, that's not bad.
She's coming back next week, by the way. Yeah, season 2 starts on Valentine's Day.
Wrap up like the last, they did like the wrap-up episode we never watched, so.
Huh. Yeah, it was good.
Okay.
I'm looking through movies that I've reviewed. Trying to find, I'm sure there's something in there.
Well, I'm just going to go off the top of my head and call the Blue Lagoon on this.
Blue Lagoon, yeah, not bad.
Or maybe Return to the Blue Lagoon.
So why? So what is it? Just because they returned to it?
Just because, yeah, they went back and then did the exact same thing a second time.
All right. trying to remember the exact setup of this movie, but I reviewed the backup plan, which is like Jennifer Lopez decides that she needs to have a baby, and so she gets artificially inseminated the same day she meets the man of her dreams.
Oh, did I see that?
Maybe. And she like, yeah. And he like sticks around to like raise this kid that isn't his, and it's just a terrible, and
did you review? Okay, you did review.
He makes cheese. I should probably actually open the review, but yeah, he's like an artisanal cheese maker who sells his cheese in a New York, you know, farmer's market or something, and she runs like a dog, like a pet grooming salon or something. It's just, you know, I mean, it's just essentially just, you know, it's a dumb premise.
Right? Yes, that's rough. That is rough. All right, well, I'm going to go with an easy one just because it crossed my mind recently, but maybe it's because as a father I think about these things more, but Home Alone.
Yeah.
What mother or parents? You know, I mean, you don't have any friends you can call just to go pick your kid up. I'm trying to even think through, like, did they do – because I know Catherine O'Hara's in that movie, and she ended up, like, trekking across to go get her kid, but there had to be an easier way.
Sure. I mean, like,
nothing about that movie, obviously, in that, and
I guess even just the basic premise of like forgetting one of your kids. I know they had a lot of kids, and I know that
right.
See, they counted the neighbor kid by mistake, but still, it seems like you figure that.
They're counting their kids instead of looking at them, which I think pretty much proves Dave's point in the first place.
I mean, after they get that, they never even. Yeah, nothing. Nobody notices that this kid's gone, and then
go ahead.
I was saying that's fine if you're taking, you know, your cattle on a trip to France.
Yeah,
but
right.
Your kids, you know, maybe you want to pay closer attention.
So put yourself in that position, Eric. You go on you have a harried exit, and you land.
Absolutely.
Your beloved daughter you left behind, and she's like,
oops,
8, 9, 10 at the time. So you, as a concerned father, horrified father, I would think, what would you do?
Yeah. I guess I probably,
hope she's learned her gadgets.
Call friends, call cops. Yeah, right. Call the next.
Did they ever call the cops and have them come by to try to like find him? Or
I don't think so.
You know, I have a faint memory that they showed up and he wasn't there, or he was hiding or something.
Yeah.
Like such a scary movie, and then he hid from, I don't know, I can't remember, but I don't know.
Actually, Home Alone, I mean, Home Alone 2 is even worse.
Is there, like, church group you can call? You know, you got nothing?
Sure. I mean, I guess, you know, if your entire life is your 8 kids, I guess, and you've made no friends where you live.
That's right, 0 friends.
I mean, maybe if it all took place in like a cult compound or something, just separated yourself from the outside world. Although you're probably then not going on vacation overseas. I don't know.
Right.
You're right. You're right. That's a head scratcher.
Probably not worth deconstructing Home Alone.
No.
Let's move on. Eric, why don't you wrap us up?
All right. Shocking moments in sports. In movies or TV.
Yes.
That the Angels in Angels in the Outfield actually showed up and helped them win. That they actually cared enough to jump out and help them make awesome catches and hit home runs.
Like they had nothing better to do.
Yeah, they had nothing better to do. Just, you know, we really dig this, you know, this Anaheim team, and we're gonna come out with these guys.
Well, I'm gonna have to go with that entirety of the blooper reel from the Naked Gun.
Oh yeah, good.
Some other the guy getting hit by the car on second base, getting mauled by the tiger or the lion,
the head coming off,
falling off.
Because of, oh, that's so great.
When he's jumping up to make the catch.
That's so good. That's a good movie.
You gotta watch the Naked Gun now. I think.
I know.
You know, I don't know. I don't think I have that as part of any kind of physical media. I need to track that. I need to.
I know. I think
I've seen it recently, and it holds up really well.
Yeah, yeah. I think I watched it last year.
Yeah.
All 3, I guess, just came on Netflix recently.
They did?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anyway. All right, well, I'm going to go with The Last Boy Scout. David, I'm sorry. I'm going to spoil a little bit of the movie for you, but pretty much the opening scene of the movie takes place at this football game. It's in the pouring rain. And as one player is being pressured by these mobsters to, I think, basically throw the game. I think he has to do something, and he can't take it. He's on drugs, I believe, and he basically, while he is running downfield with the ball, stops, pulls out a gun, shoots other players, and then kills himself.
Okay.
And that's how the movie starts.
Oh.
Can't you at least finish the play?
Well, he may have gotten the touchdown. I'm not really sure. I don't know if it counts at that point. I'm not familiar with all of the penalties in football. I know that, I know the fair catch kick is a rare play. I imagine this is probably also a rather rare play as well. But, and then the movie ends with another kind of crazy, sports, you know, football game too, culminating in, the bad guy falling into the blades of a helicopter, right, as you mentioned. Yeah, so.
Fantastic. All right. Well, that is that. My new pair of headphones are biting into my ears. So wrap this up. That's going to leave a mark. So Logitech, you've got crystal clear, you know, audio, but you are just digging into my flesh right now. So hopefully, Mac, we'll see you next week, I'm sure. So with that, we are done with this edition of Friday Filibuster. Thank you, Daryl. Thank you, Eric. Daryl, do you have anything to take us away with? You can do it.
You can say no, too.
You can say no as well. Yeah, you can't say
Flaming boars.